Hello again, podcasters, and welcome to this series of podcasts brought to you in association with Kilkenny Library Service and the Government's Decade of Centenaries Fund through Kilkenny County Council. My name is Owen Swinton Welsh, and in these podcasts, we examine different aspects of Kilkenny's revolutionary era history. Now, in today's podcast, we'll take a look at the last months and weeks of the Civil War in Kilkenny, specifically between March and May 1923. Now, the Irish Civil War as a conflict officially ended on Thursday, the 24th of May 1923, although I know some people would argue it did not end until 2020 when Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael got together in government. But back in 1923, the anti-Treacy soldiers followed their orders when two statements were issued simultaneously on the 24th of May. One of these was by Eamon de Valera, the political leader of the anti-Treacy side. The other was by Frank Aiken, who was the military leader of the anti-Treacy side. He was basically the chief of staff following the death of Liam Lynch. Now, saying that there had been little fighting since the beginning of May, some 3 weeks previously, this was because a ceasefire non-offence order was issued by the IRA, which came into effect at the end of April 1923. This is basically saying that don't go out looking for trouble, but you can protect your guns if someone tries to take them off you. This was issued by the anti-treaty leadership in order to have some form of peace talks, if you can call them that, with the Free States. In other words, to come up with some agreement with the other side to stop the hostilities. From the Free State side, they would have wanted the other side to hand in their weapons and give an unconditional surrender. The anti-treaty side would have wanted the release of their prisoners. Now, the Free States were having none of it. The cards were firmly in their hands, and they were not willing to negotiate major concessions with the anti-treaty side. Over 12,000 anti-treaty prisoners were in jails or internment camps around the country at this stage. The anti-treaty side had little resources and little support for the continuance of their fight. From the Free State point of view, they were not going to release thousands of men back into the country where they could pick up the guns and start fighting again from where they left off, basically. So in the end, a dump arms order was issued to the remaining anti-treaty IRA combatants in the field. In other words, put down your guns, stop the fighting, and return to normal life if you can. Although not officially stated, the Free State side adhered to this by and large. However, there was no word on the prisoners, and the anti-treaty side also did not have to surrender their arms. Indeed, some of those weapons in question would be used by breakaway groups of the IRA in the 1920s and 1930s, sometimes killing guards and politicians. But that's a story for another day. But certainly in April, and especially May 1923, even before the ceasefire, you can see life in Kilkenny was really getting back to normal. Cinemas were going full throttle. Everyone was out and about for the Easter services and Mass and the Easter holidays. In Kilmarnock, there was a major strike by the creamery workers who clashed with the local farmers for wage increases. Now, this was nothing to do with the Civil War, but a sure sign things were getting back to normal. In May, the coadjutor bishop of Ossory was travelling around the county giving the sacrament of confirmation to hundreds of boys and girls in the various churches and parishes. So things were fairly normal for the average Kilkenny person who was not involved in the fighting, of course. Now, De Valera had been pushing for a ceasefire since the beginning of the year, but he was being given short shrift by Liam Lynch, who wanted to continue the fight. Now that Frank Aiken was in charge of the anti-treaty forces, it opened the door to a ceasefire. Here is some of De Valera's famous dump arms statement issued on the 24th of May. It went as follows, quote, "Soldiers of the Republic, Legion of the Rear Guard, the Republic can no longer be defended successfully by your arms. Further sacrifice of life would now be in vain, and continuance of the struggle in arms unwise in the national interest and prejudicial to the future of our cause. Military victory must be allowed to rest for the moment with those who have destroyed the Republic. Do not let sorrow overwhelm you. Your efforts and the sacrifices of your dead comrades in this forlorn hope will surely bear fruit. They have even already borne fruit. Much that you set out to accomplish is achieved. You have saved the nation's honour, preserved the sacred national tradition, and kept open the road of independence. You have demonstrated in a way there is no mistaking that we are not a nation of willing bond slaves. 7 years of intense effort have exhausted our people. Their sacrifices and their sorrows have been many. If they have turned aside and not given you the active support which alone could bring you victory in this last year, it is because they saw overwhelming forces against them, and they are weary and need rest. The thought that you still have to suffer for your devotion will lighten your present sorrow, and what you endure will keep you in communion with your dead comrades who gave their lives, and all these lives, promised for Ireland. May God guard every one of you, and give to our country in all times of need sons who will love her as dearly and devotedly as you. Eamon de Valera, May 24th, 1923. End quote. And just to be aware that that statement was not issued to the press or to the general public, but to the IRA commanders in each region for their forwarding to all the ranks underneath them. It found its way into the newspapers actually a few days later. Thus, it was an extremely low-key end to the Civil War, considering its explosive start. But if we can now go back a little to early 1923, there had been some forms of peace movements in the offing since the beginning of the year. For instance, anti-treaty IRA prisoners could be released from Kilkenny Military Barracks or Kilkenny Jail if they signed a declaration stating they would no longer take up arms against the Free State government. They also had to get their character vouched by two responsible persons from their home parish. Now, not many prisoners took up this offer, but some did in early 1923. No doubt the executions of two Kilkenny men shocked a few of these young men. At this time, Liam Deasy, an anti-treaty IRA officer from Cork, had been captured near Clonmel and imprisoned in Kilkenny. He ordered the men under his command, who were imprisoned, to sign the declaration to avoid being executed. He was basically kind of being practical, and there's no doubt that the execution policy around Ireland would have scared a lot of people. It was said that several prisoners approved of Deasy's motives and were soon released after signing the declaration. Liam Lynch, the overall anti-treaty leader of Cork, was not happy with this turn of events. Now, the declaration undertaken was as follows, quote, I promise that I will not use arms against the Parliament elected by the Irish people or the government for the time being responsible to that Parliament, and that I will not support in any way such action, nor will I interfere with the property or persons of others. End quote. Now, another aspect that can't be discounted is the idea that some of the anti-treaty were becoming demoralised with the war as it was progressing. They were under severe pressure and getting little help from above. Indeed, Ned Elward, the famous leader of the anti-treaty IRA in Kilkenny, became disillusioned with the direction of the civil war and lack of support he was receiving, and so he resigned his position in Kilkenny in March 1923, following what he said was an argument with others in the 2nd Southern Division leadership. He was later arrested but released, perhaps given his status as a prominent IRA fighter and his decision not to continue the fighting. Although the course of the fighting looked inevitable to many, i.e. the active IRA fighters would continue to be captured week by week and thrown into prison, soon, quite literally, there would be no one left to fight. And the general public had also grown sick of the continuous fighting and upheaval of the previous year, if not the previous few years, and they just wanted a rest from it all. In the opposing corner, you had the Free State Army, which had at this stage 50,000 plus soldiers, multiples of the resources available to the anti-treaty IRA. The Free States also had a near limitless supply of weapons and ammunition, something the anti-treaty could only dream about. So in that regards, something had to give. They were really fighting an uphill battle. But before we get to that, let's just rewind a few months to see where things stood in Kilkenny. The anti-treaty IRA weren't going to give up without a fight. Indeed, the destruction of houses and infrastructure, the latter being something that annoyed the general public greatly, especially the upheaval to the railways, only reached its zenith between February and April 1923, during the last months of the conflict. Indeed, March 1923 actually turned out to be the deadliest month for Kilkenny natives of the entire revolutionary period. A total of 8 Kilkenny natives died in that month alone. So although the Civil War petered out in May 1923, March 1923 was a different story just a few weeks earlier. I suppose you could call it the sting of a dying wasp. So what happened in March 1923 to earn it the bleak title of the worst month for fatalities during the revolutionary era in Kilkenny? Well, the weeks before and after St. Patrick's Day 1923 witnessed a number of clashes between the opposing forces in County Kilkenny as the Free State Army tightened their noose against the bands of anti-Treaty IRA still in the rural parts of the county. Some of these clashes had fatal consequences. On the 8th of March 23, a convoy of Free State soldiers was ambushed near Mullivat village. Three of their party were wounded in the attack, although there was no fatalities. The Free State Army immediately planned a counter-offensive, and reinforcements were requested from Kilkenny, Clonmel and Waterford. They planned an encircling manoeuvre with the aim of flushing out this anti-Treaty IRA party, who were based in that part of southeast Kilkenny, specifically in the areas around Lister, Lynn, Tullaher and Inishtig. The following day, on Friday the 9th of March, they began an encircling movement coming from different directions. Some of the Free State soldiers moved from Mullinavass village itself, others moved from the Greignamana and New Ross side of things. Sections of Free State soldiers covered a 20-mile area, and they all moved in the direction of Brandon Hill, the highest point in County Kilkenny, which is located about 4 kilometres south of Greignamana. The strategy was to ensnare the anti-Treaty men in an ever-tightening cordon. Having passed through the village of Tullaher, one of these sections, led by Commandant James O'Hanrahan, came into contact with the anti-Treaty IRA column. A gun battle broke out, which lasted a number of hours, as the Free State soldiers pursued the anti-Treaty men through the unforgiving terrain. As darkness fell, the anti-Treaty IRA escaped northwards through the parish of Inistigue. There was a number of casualties on both sides, including one Free State soldier fatality whose body was not discovered until the following morning. The anti-Treaty IRA were reported to have 6 wounded. The Free State soldier killed during that altercation was Gerard Jeremiah Comfort, a native of Clockarinca, Ballyfoyle, County Kilkenny, in the parish of Muckalee. His body was found at Cool Namuk in Inishtig, having been shot a number of times during the exchange of fire. Comfort was 23 years old and at the time of his death had worked on his father's farm prior to joining the Free State Army. He had been an active member of the 3rd Battalion IRA during the War of Independence. His funeral, with full military honours, then took place in Muckalee on Sunday the 11th of March. He was the oldest son of Michael and Anne Comfort's 14 children. Later, Gerard's father was awarded just £25 as a once-off payment for the death of his son, a fairly insulting amount, equivalent to just over €2,000 in today's money. This was later increased to £50 on appeal, the equivalent of about €4,500 in today's money. Gerard's sister later applied for a dependence allowance for his death, but just to show how local stories can be exaggerated, some referees believed the family had received £70, while another story went around that both parents had applied separately for their son's loss to get double the amount, none of which was true, of course. Either way, considering the paltry amounts in question, it was a small thing to be arguing over. And this happened a lot in regards to pensions, that people kind of thought that everyone else got more than them, or rumours spread around, most of it of course untrue. And rank and file Free State soldiers from small farms or labouring backgrounds often received the least amount of money and sympathy, it should be said, in commemorations, etc. Now, the Free State Army weren't the only ones having bad luck. just after midnight on the 10th of March 1923, a group of anti-Treaty IRA attempted to raid the home of Jim Buggy in Ballyuskill, which is located about 8 kilometres north of Ballyragus, near the border with County Laois. Buggy was said to be a strong supporter of the Treaty and the Free State government. The anti-Treaty men were attempting to take firearms they knew were in his possession. Buggy must have got wind of the impending raid, as that day he travelled to Kilkenny to buy extra ammunition for his guns, and he also boarded up the windows of his house. The raiding party requested that Buggy open the door. He refused, and the anti-Treaty men fired shots through the downstairs windows. Buggy then opened fire on the men from the upstairs windows. The anti-Treaty IRA returned fire but retired soon afterwards. During the initial burst of fire, however, Buggy shot one of the anti-Treaty men. Thomas Mealy, who was a 19-year-old carpenter from Coolbawn, Upper Hills, Castleton Comer, was mortally wounded, having been shot through the lung. His comrades decided they had to leave him to avoid being captured themselves, but they stopped at the local priest's house in Ballyuskill to inform Father Comfort of the badly injured man who was in the vicinity of Buggy's home. It was nearly daylight before the priest and members of the Buggy family found the body of Mealy. He had passed away sometime during the night. His body was brought by the Free State forces to Douro military barracks, where a brother of the deceased identified his remains. A largely attended funeral was held for Thomas Mealy in Castlecomer 2 days later. Now, like the deceased Free State soldier Comfort, who died a few days previously, Mealy also had been a member of the 3rd Battalion IRA during the War of Independence. So, in that regard, they were on the same side a few years earlier. Mealy's brother, William Mealy, was also the Vice OC, Officer Commanding of the entire 3rd Battalion Anti-Treaty IRA during the Civil War. Thomas was the 4th in a family of 6 children and left his mother, Elizabeth, and his father, Thomas Sr., with whom he worked as a carpenter before the Civil War, to grieve his loss. Now, anti-Treaty victims did not receive compensation until after Fianna Fáil came into power. In 1933, Mealy's mother, Elizabeth, received £30 for the loss of her son. Kilkenny men in other parts of the country were not having good fortune during the bleak month of March 23 either. On Tuesday the 6th of March, 18-year-old Richard Duggan of Scart, Mullavas, was accidentally shot by a comrade in Waterford Infirmary, which is kind of like the workhouse, where he was stationed. Duggan had been on the night shift acting as a sentry on post, guarding the barracks. After finishing his shift at 7:30 a.m, he handed in his rifle, as was the usual procedure, to Private Thomas Carberry, who was responsible for taking in and cleaning the weapons. The two men then just stayed chatting for a few minutes. As they stood conversing, the rifle which Carberry had been holding accidentally went off, shooting Duggan in the neck. His wounds subsequently became infected and he died the following Sunday, the 11th of March, from septic pneumonia, as it was called then. His funeral took place in his native Mullavas. He was from a family of 8 children. His parents, Ellen and Patrick, received £80 compensation for the death of their son. In another sad story, a young wife, Kate McCormack, a native of Mount Finn in Urlingford, lost her Free State soldier husband in unfortunate circumstances on the 12th of March 23. Tipperary-born Patrick McCormack was undertaking sentry duty again, but this time in the Free State garrison in Cashel Hospital in County Tipperary. At about 11:30 p.m, one of his comrades, William Doran, was coming off duty and entered the guard room. He emptied his rifle of what he believed was all the cartridges onto the table. However, when he pulled the trigger, a shot went off and hit McCormack. He died less than 30 minutes later. Kate McCormack was left a widow at the age of 21 with 3 young children, aged 3, 2 and 3 months. She was required to move back in to live with her parents in Urlingford to support her family. She later remarried 4 years later to John Moriarty, a native of Urlingford too. Her life never though received a merited happy ending that she so deserved, as in 1934, Kate died from cancer of the womb, aged just 33 years. Her 3 children then, with Patrick, were taken in by their grandmother in Urlingford, Catherine Neary. Thus, the 3 children were orphaned before they reached the age of 14. All for such a simple, tragic incident. A few days after that, on the 15th of March 23, a patrol of Free State soldiers were raiding houses in the Wine Gap area, where they were ambushed by anti-treaty IRA at Cool Hill. A gun battle lasting more than 3 hours ensued. During that clash, Free State soldier Michael Brown, who was aged just 21 years, died instantly when he was caught in a volley of machine gun fire from the anti-treaty forces. Brown was a native of Mount Ross, County Laois. Now, in another very tragic event, a clandestine visit to a public house on the afternoon of Friday, the 23rd of March 1923, had fatal consequences for two Kilkenny men who were Free State soldiers stationed in Pallas East, County Wexford. The main purpose of this army outpost, which was about 10 kilometres east of New Ross, was to protect the nearby railway line. And we've talked before about how the railway lines were a major target for the anti-treaty side to disrupt the new Free States. At about 2 p.m, Sergeant Edward Gorman from Kilkenny City and Private Patrick Horan from Callan decided to visit McCabe's licensed premises at Bala Passage East, about 3 kilometres from their barracks. The men had not sought permission to leave the garrison, although they were in civilian clothes, they were just taking a break. Some local anti-treaty IRA obviously observed the secret trip to the pub or were tipped off, as within a few hours the premises were surrounded. As Horan and Gorman left the pub at about 8 p.m. that evening, they were quickly captured. Then a false report was made to Pallas East barracks to the effect that Free State soldiers were creating a disturbance at the public house. Two Free State soldiers then, Lieutenant Thomas Jones and Private John Cook, were sent to McCabe's pub to investigate. They entered through the back kitchen of the premises and sat at the fire, oblivious to the fate of their now captured comrades somewhere outside. Soon after, though, the anti-treaty IRA burst into the kitchen, shouting "Hands up!" Private Cook tried to fire his revolver, which he had just put down, but was shot a number of times by an anti-treaty soldier. Lieutenant Jones was then led out of the premises, where he was escorted away from the area along with the already captured Gorman and Horan. The anti-treaty men then sent for a priest and a doctor to attend to Private Croke, who was now lying on a chair in McCabe's pub, badly wounded. Meanwhile, the Free State soldiers in the garrison at Pallas East heard about the happenings in the pub. They did not, though, send any more men out, as they presumed an attack on their barracks was now imminent in order to raid for weapons. It was a trap, basically, they felt. This never transpired in the end, however. The following morning, though, Pallas East Free State garrison received some grim news from a local priest. Three of their comrades, the three that had been captured, had been found dead in a farmhouse in the village of Adamstown, about 10 kilometres away. Free State lorries were sent from New Ross to collect the bodies of the men. The three men were Lieutenant Jones from Dublin, Sergeant Gorman and Private Horan from Kilkenny, as we mentioned, Callan and Kilkenny City, who had been executed in an extrajudicial killing by the anti-treaty IRA during the night. Dr. Forlong, who examined the bodies of the men, said Gorman had 12 bullet marks on the body, 5 in the legs, 5 in the body, and 1 each behind the ears. On examining Private Horan's body, he found a bullet wound in the right hip, 2 in the lower part of the abdomen, 2 in the back, and 2 in the jaws, and 1 in the base of the skull. Although he probably did not think it at the time, Private Cook, who you will remember had been shot in the pub, was the luckiest of the four men. Although the bullets had passed clean through his body, out the other side, and lodging in some furniture at McCabe's, he made an actual miraculous recovery. That twist of fate meant he avoided being executed with his comrades. Although the capture of the Free State men in South County Wexford was opportunistic in that they just heard they were in the pub, their ruthless executions were undoubtedly a direct reprisal for the execution of 3 anti-treaty IRA prisoners in Wexford jail just the week previously. They were basically looking for some Free State soldiers to carry out reprisal in revenge for those executions. That had happened on the 12th of March, just a week earlier, where 3 Wexford men, James Parle, John Crean and Patrick Hogan, were executed by military firing squad. Coincidentally, actually, their bodies were brought from Wexford and interred in Kilkelly Military Barracks, then the Free State HQ for the region, although they were given back a few years later. The bodies of the two Free State Kilkenny men killed in Wexford were returned home for their funerals. Edward Gorman was 23 years old and was a school teacher prior to enlisting in the Free State Army, of which he'd only joined a month previously. He was from a family of seven siblings and had fought in the First World War as a member of the Royal Irish Regiment. His large funeral took place at St Mary's Cathedral in Kilkenny City the following Tuesday, the 27th of March. He was buried in nearby St Roch's Cemetery, and a commemoration was held for him more recently on the centenary of his death, with a service again in St Mary's Cathedral by his descendants. Patrick Horan was 25 years old at the time of his death and a native of Flag Lane and later Haggard's Green in Callan. He was from a family of at least five children, including a number of half-siblings, as his mother was married previously and had been widowed. He was an office clerk before enlisting in the Free State Army at the beginning of 1923. He had also fought in the First World War, where he had reached the rank of sergeant. After his funeral mass in Callan, he was buried in Kilbride Cemetery. Now, Edward O'Gorman's father, that's Patrick Gorman from Chapel Lane, Wellington Place in Kilkenny City, who was actually a very well-known postman in Kilkenny, received £50 for the compensation for his son's death. So that's, as we said before, about €4,500. Similarly, Patrick Horan's father, Patrick Sr., also received £50. In 2007, with the help of the locals in Adamstown, a monument was erected there to commemorate the three dead men. Now, as the evenings began to get longer in April 23, there was growing optimism that there was indeed some light at the end of the tunnel, with hopes of a truce on the horizon. The ill-fated death on the 10th of April 23 of Liam Lynch, the Chief of Staff of the Anti-Treaty IRA in Ireland, at the hands of Free State soldiers, brought a renewed expectation that the Civil War would be soon over. In late March, a meeting of the National Anti-Treaty Leadership in Powlacapel, Mulnahone, close to the Kilkenny border, nearly brought the Civil War to an end. Tom Barry wanted to end it, but his motion was defeated by just one vote. Liam Lynch was very much against calling off the conflict. Prior to his death, Lynch was actually conveyed through South Kilkenny by a number of Kilkenny men on his final journey to Munster. Lynch was met in County Carlow, close to Greignamana, by Martin McGrath, Lister Lynn Tolliher, former OC of the 6th Battalion. McGrath escorted Lynch, accompanied by two armed anti-treaty IRA men, by a motor car through South Kilkenny to Munkine. From here, Ted Moore and some other Munkine men brought Lynch over the border to Tipperary, and they just needed the local knowledge so they wouldn't be caught out in the back roads. Lynch was just a few weeks later killed on the Knockmedown Mountains, which straddled the borders of County Tipperary and Waterford. Now, the tangled web that is Irish history was evident in the death by natural causes of one Kilkenny native who passed away on the 8th of April 23. Free State Private Thomas Davis, who was from Low Street in Thomastown, died in Clonas Military Hospital in County Monaghan, where he had been stationed. He was 28 years old and was ill in the barracks for over a week, dying in the end of a suspected pneumonia infection. Commandant James O'Hanrahan, who was an officer in the Free State Garrison in Kilkenny Military Barracks, was informed by his colleagues in Clonas that Davis's remains would be arriving in Kilkenny the following morning by train. The coffin would be draped in the tricolour, therefore implying a funeral with full military honours was required. O'Hanrahan, not knowing who Davis was, then called in James Blanchfield, a Free State Private who was a native of Thomastown, into his office and asked him who this Thomas Davis of Thomastown was. O'Hanrahan was taken aback by his answer. Thomas Davis had been employed by the auxiliaries in Woodstock for over a year during the War of Independence. When names and addresses of suspected IRA members were sent to Woodstock, Davis and another man, Richard Hall, was allegedly responsible for pointing out the location of the addresses on a map so the auxiliaries knew where they were going, basically, and who the people were who they were searching for. Similarly, arrested men who refused to give their names to their arresting officers were often identified by Davis. when the auxiliaries were disbanded eventually in early 1922, just after the treaty was signed, Davis returned to Thomastown. However, the local IRA men gave him 24 hours to leave the country or suffer the consequences as punishment for working against his own countrymen. Davis subsequently departed for England via Rosslare. Now unbeknownst to the IRA in Thomastown, Davis evidently returned and enlisted in the Free State Army. Blanchfield had actually even attended school with Davis in Thomastown when they were kids. It highlights, though, the splits and the animosities that came into small communities during these troubled times. To compound matters further, James O'Hanrahan, the Free State officer in Kilkenny, was one of those people who was captured and taken to Woodstock at one stage. Now, Davis and Hanrahan were technically in the same army together, so he probably was not too enamoured by the turn of events. Unsurprisingly then, O'Hanrahan was not going to allow Davis receive a full military funeral. He informed Lieutenant Connolly of Thomastown Free State Barracks that under no circumstances was a military funeral to be given to the remains of Davis. When the train stopped in Kilkenny Railway Station on its journey down to Thomastown, the coffin was stripped of the tricolour flag and the soldiers accompanying the coffin were ordered to leave the train and basically report to a military barracks in Kilkenny. The train with the remains of Davis was then allowed to proceed to Thomastown, where a regular funeral service took place for Davis with his family. Just a week after that event, there was much gloom in the Callan area on the 19th of April when 27-year-old Jim Egan, one of the best combatants during the War of Independence era, was killed near his home in Paula Capel, County Tipperary, in a shootout with Free State forces. Paula Capel was just over the Kilkenny border near the Callan area. Egan had been a prominent member of the 7th Battalion in Kilkenny. From a family of 15 children, he had played in the infamous Bloody Sunday football match for the Tipperary football team, where his teammate Michael Hogan was shot dead. Initially, he had joined the Free State Army, but switched to the anti-treaty side in July 22 once the Civil War broke out. Egan's four brothers were also arrested and interned following the clash at Paula Capel. Their home place in Paula Capel contained a famous hideout, Kathmandu, as it was called, at which the stopping of the Civil War was accepted in the aftermath of Jim Egan being shot. The Free State forces must have known the likes of De Valera and Aiken were in the area, hence the raid on Egan's, but they still never found the hideout. On the day in question, the Free State were raiding the house to arrest all the men there when Jim decided to make an escape across the fields, getting out through a window. A gun battle ensued and he was mortally wounded. The anti-treaty IRA executive meeting that effectively ended the Civil War was held on the 20th of April 1923 in that Kathmandu location at Paula Capel, Mullinahone. No doubt the death of Jim Egan brought the crowds to the house maybe to sympathise with the family, and this likely acted as a cover for people coming and going. Also, the tragedy of what had occurred to the Egan family just the day before must have encouraged the minds of the likes of De Valera and Aiken to end hostilities. Also in attendance at that fateful meeting were Tom Barry, the veteran fighter. During the meeting, it was decided to suspend all offensive operations nationwide as of noon on Monday, the 30th of April, as I mentioned previously. Subsequently, as we said, on the 24th of May, Frank Aiken and De Valera released a joint statement ordering a dump of arms, thus officially ending the Civil War. The conclusion of the Civil War was in complete contrast really to the dramatic opening, in that the war came to a slow, perhaps inevitable, cessation. People just got on with life as best they could then. And technically, no one had won the war, as although the anti-treaty had been overpowered, they had not actually surrendered. Thus, their dump arms order could be seen as a mild compromise by the Free State side. In other words, they were not going to force the anti-treaty to hand in their weapons and do a public surrender statement. But nor did the Free State give any guarantees about the 12,000 plus anti-treaty prisoners then imprisoned. As it turned out, the majority of these prisoners were released 7 months later, just before Christmas 1923, after a large hunger strike protest. In Kilkenny, however, that's in the city, there was something of an unofficial celebration in the aftermath of the Civil War. President of the Irish Free State, W.T. Cosgrave, made his first trip to Kilkenny in nearly a year. This occurred just days after the dump arms order during the weekend after hostilities officially ceased. When Cosgrave, who was the local TD, don't forget, was last in Kilkenny 12 months previously, he was just one of the cabinets. In the intervening time, in literally just less than 12 months, both Griffiths and Collins had died, and now Cosgrave was leading the Free State government, basically the Taoiseach, although the title was not used at that time. Huge crowds turned out on the parade in Kilkenny to hear his speech. He was accompanied by fellow minister Owen McNeill. The visit gave a chance for a contemplative E.T. Keane of the Kilkenny people to reflect on the events of recent years and the vast changes that had occurred in the county. Quote, "In less than 6 years, this most extraordinary revolution has been wrought. When, in July 1917, William T. Cosgrave was first introduced to the electors of Kilkenny for the by-election that year, the city was flooded with British military and police. On Saturday evening last, the 26th of May 1923, when he stepped off the train, this man, who by a miracle escaped the British firing squad in 1916, was received by a guard of honour of the National Army, commanded by a young Kilkenny man, Commandant James O'Hanrahan, and every vestige of foreign power had disappeared from the city that had the good sense to elect him 6 years ago. Truly a marvellous change." End quote. And I think on that more positive note, I think it's where we leave it today. And just to thank you all once again for listening. And don't forget to join your local library to avail of all the brilliant free resources. Until next time.